Welcome one and welcome all to the greatest show of them all. It is the NFC East mixtape volume, I believe, 143, maybe 144. Totally not certain at this point in time. You can listen to this show wherever you get your SB Nation NFC East blog podcast across the SB Nation network. You can also watch it on the Bleeding Green Nation YouTube channel or the Blogging the Boys YouTube channel. My name is RJ Ochoa from Blogging the Boys. His name is Brandon Lee Gutton from Bleeding Green Nation. BLG, happy Tuesday morning for you and I.
More like the NFC least mixtape, because every team in the division lost for, that has to be the first time in quite some time.
I was going to look it up. I thought about when I was walking the dog this morning, I thought like, man, because obviously Philly barely lost last year and Dallas even barely lost last year. I think the Dallas and Philly might've lost once in the same week a year ago. I can't remember now. But for all four to lose in the same week is definitely a rarity. Probably been 2 or 3 years would be my guess.
Well, here we are.
Once upon a time, you may recall, after the Cowboys lost in Philadelphia in the Cooper Rush game, you came in and you were, you know, walking around. You said, it's not going to be a good episode for you, RJ. It's not going to be a good episode for you. It's not going to be a good episode for you, Brandon.
It's
not going to be a good episode for you.
But it's also not going to be a good episode for you either.
I mean, it's a better episode for me.
What are you talking about?
let's get to it. I don't think we have time for fiddle faddle around here, which, did you know that's the name of a snack?
No. What kind of snack is that?
It's like a caramelly kind of popcorn. Google it. It's called fiddle faddle. My mom
not
was
like
the first
sweet popcorn kind of guy.
I mean, I'm just telling you what it is. I'm not saying, you would love it.
Not a sweet popcorn.
Do you ever get like in the mall, like the popcorn stands that have the, like, you know, different flavors or whatever? You ever stop by one of those?
Can't say I'm in the mall very much.
My wife loves this jalapeno cheddar popcorn. What are your thoughts on that taste?
I like the sound of it. I would be curious to try. Still think, you know, it's hard to go wrong with just the basic butter and salt, like the movie theater popcorn, but sure. I would be open to trying that.
Okay, so here's the situation for all the mixologists out there. The Dallas Cowboys and Philadelphia Eagles both clinched playoff spots over the weekend. They both lost, and everybody lost. This division is down, obviously, and has been down, really started with the two of them. But obviously the playoff picture is down to the two of them. We will, of course, touch on the New York Giants. Obviously, they play the Eagles next week and play them twice in the final 3 weeks of the regular season. The Commanders, we will touch on. But this is going to be a heavy Dallas-Philly episode, as BLG mentioned when I told him that. They all kind of tend to be.
Everyone complains about that. Everyone in the offseason.
Well, now we have a reason to kind of lean into that. So
there's always been a reason to do that, because the other teams haven't been relevant in a big way.
We're saying the same thing. We're on the same page. So let's get to it. We go in divisional order, which once again features the Dallas Cowboys at the top.
I am quite fine with that this time. It's a good thing to me.
The Dallas Cowboys lost on Sunday in Buffalo, 31-10. They have not won there since when, Brandon? Do you know?
I don't know. I mean,
it was a game. It was a game that I imagine pissed a very young BLG off. It was a Monday Night Football game in 2006. Tony Romo had a million turnovers.
I don't remember that.
It was a really like incredible last second victory. Nick Folk had a 53-yard field goal, blah, blah, blah. T.O. was a big part of it. Maybe that makes me happy, but whatever. Anyway, Cowboys were never in the game on Sunday in Buffalo. It was a total and absolute destruction. Josh Allen only completed 7 passes. a destruction where he wasn't even a part of it. And the proverbial, like, if I had told any Cowboys fan, like, oh, Josh Allen's only going to complete 7 passes, they would have been like, oh, we kicked their ass. You know what I mean? Like, it was 31-10, and it just, like, never went their way. James Cook had 221 yards from scrimmage. He was the first player to record at least 220 yards from scrimmage against the Dallas Cowboys since Calvin Johnson in 2013. I don't know if you remember that game by chance. He averaged over 7 yards a carry despite having 25 carries. The first player in the NFL to have done that in over 2 years, the last one of which, I thought this was interesting when I found this, was Dalvin Cook, his older brother. So that was kind of cool. Never close. And I think just to kind of spark notes, give you like Cowboys fans perspective. I know you had eyes on this game. Obviously it was our same game parlay game on the SB Nation NFL show. We whiffed badly. Well, you didn't, your leg hit. But I would have hit if Mike McCarthy challenged the Stephon Diggs fumble.
That's part of the name of the game. Gotta be good at challenging.
So it was never close. And, you know, early on, it felt like, man, the Cowboys were just kind of shooting themselves in the foot with these personal fouls. The DeMarcus Lawrence roughing the passer that was somewhat debatable. The Sam Williams awful roughing the kicker, which we've obviously talked about extensively at BTB. Jayron Kearse had a roughing, you know, unsportsmanlike penalty that was debatable. And all these things kept giving Buffalo life and kept, you know, keeping them in possessions. They wound up turning into touchdowns, but the Cowboys offense wasn't keeping pace. And I do think the Cowboys ran the ball somewhat well. Like if I'm really trying to stretch and find something that I thought was like passable, no pun intended or reverse pun, I guess, it was their ability to run the ball, which was nice, but that was taken away from them with the hole that they dug for themselves. It felt like the inverse of the game before for Dallas. I mean, at halftime, it felt like they were over and done with the way Philly was at halftime a week prior.
Yeah, like you said, it was never really a game. I think you could have had Kyle Allen in there.
He did get in at the very end.
I mean, in terms of like to start the game, just in terms of how much they ran it and didn't even really need to throw the ball too much. And look, that was a big issue for the Cowboys, obviously, in the offseason. That was a big reason you talked about, you know, why it's important to draft Mazi Smith. Obviously, the Cowboys losing Jonathan Hankins hurts with that, but it can't just be like, well, we lose our one run stuffing defensive tackle, so the whole run defense is just not even viable. Like, it can't be that fragile. I mean, that hurts. Yes, I get it, but it shouldn't be like, well, if we have this player, we're good, and if we don't have him, we're hopeless. So, the big sentiment I saw from afar, I think, coming out of that Cowboys game is like same old Cowboys in terms of issues that have been happening with the run, issues that have been happening, which is more recent, and then historically issues winning on the road, like being the road. And that's extremely relevant, obviously, to the team. I think this loss in a vacuum isn't that damning because the Bills, I think, you know, I've said this. I thought the Cowboys were going to lose this game. I predicted that. I thought the Bills, you know, they're heating up. They're due for some positive regression, you know, being better than their record indicates, right, in DVOA and point differential, stuff like
that. The bizarro Eagles, right.
That's fine. But the bigger picture, like, can the Cowboys win on the road? Can they be the same team on the road, especially against a higher level of competition? That cloud still very much lingers over this team.
My kind of way that I summarized that in the lead up to the game was, I think everyone kind of agrees with your point. Like, the Bills were the hungrier team, the more desperate team. Like, I mean, they're flying high right now, all Bills fans, and they're the ninth seed in the AFC, right? Like, that just is kind of, you know, representative of the awkwardness of their situation. Whereas, you know, in a similar way with the Eagles, it's like the Cowboys just got embarrassed and they're firmly in the playoffs. They're literally in the playoffs and they have all these opportunities in front of them, whatever. But what I said I wanted to see from the Cowboys was, go into this, you know, hostile environment, one of the more impressive environments in the NFL, against a team that is, you know, up against a wall, against a team that is scrapping and will do absolutely anything that they can because they're fighting for their playoff lives. And Jeff Probst style, snuff their torch. Like, say, who cares if you're that desperate? Who cares if you're that hungry? We're just that badass that we're just going to kill you no matter what, because that's who we are. And they didn't do that. And there's a lot of people who think like, oh, well, they knew they clinched the playoff spot, so they, you know, kind of took their foot off the gas, whatever. I don't ever subscribe to things like that. So it was disappointing. It does, you know, give life to the same old Cowboys things. And I think that sometimes takes like that are really lazy, but they're impossible to defuse right now. They're, you know, no matter what objective evidence we can point to, and I think that there is a lot, but still, like, that same team, and you're going to lose on reality is that, oh, you were gone for a second. You're back now. Everything's okay. I thought you really disagreed with my take. But yeah, and they have another opportunity coming up, I suppose, to win on the road against a legitimate team. But if they do, and we'll get to that, obviously, if they do go beat the Dolphins, and even if they squash them, people will say, oh, well, the Dolphins are frauds too. So like that one doesn't really count. It wasn't quite a measuring stick opportunity, but it was a like stay standing tall opportunity, and they didn't. And everybody failed. That's what was really unique about this was every single person failed. It was a horrible game for Mike. I said, you know, in my shock report, our post game, this was one of the worst Mike McCarthy games as the Cowboys head coach and certainly play caller. Dan Quinn, you know that I've been banging on this drum. This is now twice in the last three games that Dan Quinn has gotten absolutely worked. He got worked by the Geno Smith-led Seahawks offense. They didn't punt, although they did have the fourth down stops at the end. They obviously got destroyed, although they did force a punt by James Cook and the Bills. I mean, you know, I've been told by every Cowboys fan, it feels like, oh, Dan Quinn's the one who's really in charge. Dan Quinn's the one who's running the show. Dan Quinn's the one who gets all the credit. Well, then, you know, are we going to hold his feet to the fire here when the group is really bad and really poor? In my stock report that I mentioned, I had stock downs for Dak Prescott and Micah Parsons. And the Dak one, I think, is really obvious. Like, He played really poorly. Obviously didn't have a lot to work with, and Zach Martin got hurt. But you want to be the MVP? You want to be that guy? You got to find a way. You have to be the guy. It's not a fair standard because you're the guy. And I think that Micah Parsons has played himself into that standard. And you're a part of the group that just got worked. I mean, in a way that no one had done to the Cowboys since Calvin Johnson a decade ago. So disappointing game from the superstars, disappointing game from the coaching staff, disappointing game all the way around.
Well, the way you phrased it, I saw on your Instagram post after the game, it was like, we thought this team might be different. Like, this is your chance to prove you can be different.
And they might be, and that's what I said, but like right now you failed the first challenge.
In this game, you did not do that. Right. You did not do that, and you had the opportunity, so yeah. And look, really, obviously, I'm not trying to transition to the Eagles yet, I guess, if you're not ready, but the reality is, like, if the Eagles, you know, if they lose still and the Cowboys win, like, then the Cowboys control the division all of a sudden. And they don't now anymore still. The Eagles still have control of that despite how pathetic they look right now. So, yeah, it was a big missed opportunity for both teams, really. But I think certainly the Cowboys, who, you know, beat the Eagles, then have a chance to surge after that and just kind of take their foot off the gas and don't do that.
I did say that this was the game that scared me the most of the remaining ones for the Cowboys this year. I'm definitely tentative about the Dolphins, but, you know, the Bills just have kind of felt like this, like, you know, don't poke them. You know what I mean? They're kind of finding themselves right now. And this reminds me of the Broncos loss the Cowboys took 2 years ago. Remember how I like trashed them all season long? And then they just waxed the Cowboys. And it was really embarrassing for me.
I was thinking about that.
Right. I have. And this is a little bit different in that I've started, and you can back me up on this, I've started to kind of come back around a little bit on the Bills. So it's not quite the same, but like, of course, you know what I mean? The team that like, that I apply the like kiss of death to is the one who just manages to, you know, expose the Cowboys or ruin them or whatever the case may be.
And I know we touched on this already at the top, but like how they did it too. It's not even like, hey, you could probably live with it a little bit more if Josh Allen was totally going off and was unstoppable. That's what he did against the Eagles. And like, right. Stephon Diggs has this, you know, huge, it's just like, well, there's only so much you can do about that. But to get like run all over like that, like that's pretty concerning, especially again, as it relates to playoff football. And as it relates to having to play the Niners again, guess what the Niners are going to do all game long? They're going to run the ball all game long, and the Cowboys are going to have an answer for that if that matchup transpires.
My most copium sort of takes on this are, I do think this is more like every team has a bad game or a couple of bad games in a season. Like I'm certainly not out on the Cowboys as a Super Bowl contender, although nobody's on the playing field that the Niners are. I think you would agree right now. Although it'll be fascinating to watch them play Baltimore on Christmas night. But still, whatever. So I think they're firmly in the mix and all that. They have become a team, and they haven't, you know, lived up to the challenge, but they have become a team to where they can clinch a playoff spot and still have one of these kind of games and still have 3 weeks to work in the regular season. That is, again, I know nobody wants to hear like kudos for the Cowboys right now, but like that is the hallmark of a great organization, that you can be in situations where you have that room for error. It doesn't mean you can't get to work or you shouldn't get to work and fix all these problems, but like that is still an ultimately good thing. It also speaks to the quality of the NFL this year, which I know many people have discussed at different points.
It also will be, goes without saying, I'm going against my own thing I don't like to say. It'll be interesting to see, because that's not really saying anything, but it will be telling to see how the Cowboys respond to this loss. Is it just truly one bad game and you go out and maybe you don't even beat Miami, but it comes down to the end, you look good, it's just like, okay, Tyreek Hill made this incredible play at the end of the game, just kind of is what it is. Or do you go down there and it's, you know, it's more of the same? Is he roasting you? Is this unraveling? And then you have the Lions coming up, who seem to be getting their groove back a little bit. So it is a little bit of a treacherous stretch here. And this is, you know, what people have wanted to see all season long in terms of, okay, we know the Cowboys can beat up on the bad teams. They deserve credit for that. But at the same time, if you can't do anything against the teams with the winning records, then everyone doesn't really care about those blowout wins over bad teams.
My two biggest copium takes are, you know, everybody also has like kind of a clunker of a loss, right? Like the Eagles have the Jets loss, and you know, you could call, I've talked about like the Niners, maybe you put the Browns loss in there. I know that was in the middle of their kind of poor stretch, but the Cardinals loss is kind of the clunker loss that Dallas had. But other than that, they've lost to like these perennial Super Bowl contenders, right? In San Francisco, Philadelphia, and Buffalo. So like what a shock. Like it's hard to beat the best teams in the NFL. Again, not a good thing, but, and finally, my biggest copium take is, you know, they got the loss out of the way. Like they were never going to, like, I was always going to feel like a teeny bit uneasy in a fan way if they just like didn't lose going into the playoffs. Like, I mean, like,
that's dumb.
it is dumb, but like, it's like, that's where we're at. Like, in fanhood is like, and fandom is like, those are fan, you know, sort of qualities. And like, again, like, you know, that's like I'm not saying you ever feel that way, but like, it is a popular thing for people to be like, okay, like you got it out of the way. Like, you just
said about the Eagles last year, like when they're undefeated and it's, I know, like, to lose a game. No, they did not need to lose a game.
It's a common take. Again, I called it a copium take. So, like, to be very clear, that's where I'm at on this. But I think you and I agree the Cowboys still fine, just need to settle in, and it's going to be very interesting to see how they fare against Miami.
Relative, yeah, not fine. Fine in terms of, I think that, yeah, they're not going to unravel. I think they might lose one of their next two. I think that's very much on the table, considering the quality of opponents, too. And again, the Miami game is on the road. The Lions game is in Dallas, so certainly Dallas deserves the benefit of the doubt there. But yeah, again, like, is this a different year for the Cowboys? Again, yes, it could be. That's still on the table, but I am leaning against that after this loss.
We will get into the tie-breaking scenarios for the NFC East, but just to say now, and I know you've had a long, whatever it's been now, like 15, 16, 17, 18 hours since Monday Night Football, but Dallas can lose one of their next two games. You talked about, you think they might. They can lose one of these next two and still win the NFC East as long as the Eagles lose any game. I don't know if you know that right now.
Wait, what?
So, I mean, I guess this is our way to segue into Monday Night Football.
If the Eagles win out, they're division champs.
I know, that's what I just said. I said if the Eagles lose any game, Dallas can lose either of these next two. If the Eagles lose any one of their Giants games or the Cardinals game, if Dallas goes 2-1, but one of those wins is the Washington win,
right,
then Dallas wins.
Yeah, the Eagles can't lose to that was going into the stretch. Like, they can't afford a loss to the Giants because of the division record.
Right. All I'm saying is that in a technical sense, Dallas has to have a Philadelphia loss, right? But they do not have to have a Philadelphia loss and win out. If they get the Philly loss, they can lose one of the Dolphins or Lions games and still win the division, although they might lose the 2 seed to the Detroit Lions, obviously, in that situation.
Yeah, and also the Eagles benefited from the Cowboys' loss to the Bills in the sense that entering week 15, the Eagles needed to win out to win the division, have control of that. Now that they went, once the Cowboys lost to the Bills, the Eagles could afford at that point to lose to either the Seahawks or the Cardinals. So they did get some margin for error, which they immediately used up in a very troubling way that obviously takes them out of the 1 seed. And obviously that's the same thing. That's another, again, big reason why the Cowboys loss is a big deal, because I know the 1 seed wasn't likely with the 49ers having the head-to-head over them, but it was on the table, and now it's basically not on the table.
It was a big week for the Niners. I think we agree. All they have to do is win two of their final 3 games to clinch the 1 seed. They've already clinched the NFC West, but we're not here to talk about them. Stats does a great job of that on the Gold Standard Network. Everybody check them out. But the Eagles lost, and so in losing, they really set themselves back. And I think, again, you can kiss the 1 seed goodbye. The division is up for grabs. Again, we'll kind of get more into that in a little bit here. They have lost control for even the 2 seed. Even if the Eagles win out, they do not have control for the 2 seed. The Lions now hold control.
It's kind of weird because, again, yeah, the Cowboys and Lions play each other. So one of those results will be nice for the Eagles.
The simplified version of that is if Detroit wins out, the 2 seed is theirs. But obviously, if they lose in Dallas, then Dallas, is still a continued threat for the Eagles for the NFC East. But the Eagles lost. Now, last week, you had a statement prepared when we talked about the Eagles. I have a statement prepared, if you're okay with this.
I'm not okay with that.
Okay, so this was the bottom of your statement. You said, I'd certainly at least like to see this team put up a much more of a fight than they did against the Niners. This was talking about the Cowboys game. They did not. But the truth is, I'm not too worried about this result. This result being the hypothetical that you crafted that Philadelphia would lose in Arlington, which they did. I know it's important, but it has more of a house money feel to me.
Yes.
If the Eagles continue to crater after this one, well, then the panic truly begins.
I agree.
Until then, I'm not riding the Eagles off. I'm not doing like a gotcha thing. I know you wrote this here.
I agree with it. I was setting the table.
This is the then. The opening line of your post-game recap, this is the final portion of my statement. What we all knew deep down, but some of us, parentheses, myself included, didn't want to admit, semicolon, the Eagles are frauds.
Yeah. here's the thing. It didn't have to be this way. It wasn't like, oh, they were always going to lose to the Seahawks. I think, and here, and I stand by what I said in terms of the panic should be setting in kind of after this loss. Here's the problem. The panic set in before this loss. The Eagles made this, I want to curse, don't curse on the show, cockamamie decision to make Matt Patricia, who, like, why did they ever hire, right. Going back to that podcast in April or whenever it was, like, just an inexplicable kind of move to fire their defensive coordinator. Look, I know Sean Desai was struggling, wasn't doing a good job. I also, you have to consider that, you know, there's players and their input and there's things that go on behind the scenes. I get that. Okay. It's Matt Patricia. What are we doing? Like, what are we doing with that move? It's just, it's not a move that a 10-3 at the team at the time, sorry, team makes. That's not that kind of move. That's like a panic button move. That's like a, you know, coaches on the hot seat, playoffs are like, hopes are dwindling kind of move. And it's pathetic. It's unserious. The Eagles have been incredibly unserious. It didn't have to be, okay, we lost to the 49ers and Cowboys, so now everything's on fire and we have to scram. It didn't have to be that way. They panicked when they didn't need to panic. And I think that like filters down throughout the team. It's not the only reason they lost, because they promoted Matt Patricia and demoted Sean Desai. But like, that's like an organizational health thing that does not signal like stability. And there was even a good quote about this from Fletcher Cox that PHLY had about in an article about this defensive coordinator change. That was something to the effect of like, you know, like the players go, or I forget, I'm butchering the quote right now, but it was basically like the players kind of see the tone from the organization. Like if the coaches are going to be panicking, the players are going to start panicking. So like they needed a steady hand. And this is obviously a lot on Nick Sirianni, but it's not just him. It's even above him. It's on Howie Roseman. It's on Jeffrey Lurie, the ownership. It's a top-down kind of thing where this team started to panic and the vibes felt terrible between the Patricia thing and Jalen Hurts getting sick late in the practice and being downgraded to questionable. Like the Darius Slay having elective surgery and like finding that out a couple days before the game. Like all this stuff was just like, the vibes are not good here. And certainly Eagles lost. And I can't say I'm surprised from that standpoint once the vibes went bad.
You did tweet, I guess before, the day before the game, that like the vibes were off.
Eagles vibes real bad.
Yeah. And then I saw you like thread that quote on Monday night after the game and say like, vibes are never off or something like that. So I don't even know where to start with the like vibes of this all. I do want to, and I'm going to try to go in the order that you went. I saw our buddy Aiden Powers from the Birds versus Boys podcast had a clip from their show go out where he said, I'm sick of blaming coordinators. That is the only, I don't mean to generalize Eagles fans, because we talk about how we hate when people take like something one fan said and act like that speaks for the entire fan base. That's not true. But I do see that a lot. I don't ever really see anybody blame any Eagles players except for Darius Slay and James Bradbury. They're the only dudes who ever catch heat as far as players. Where is the blame for Jalen Hurts? Because at this point, you got to come with a whole hell. He is playing like one of the worst quarterbacks in the NFL right now. All Jalen Hurts, like you've said before too as well, like I'm not afraid of Dak Prescott. I am in no way afraid of the current version of Jalen Hurts. He is literally, this is an exaggeration of what he is. This is the Tim Tebow offense. Like he's just run around and chuck it deep every once in a while. That's all he is. I mean, like what was the last great throw he made? I was thinking like, was it the Zacchaeus touchdown against Buffalo? Yeah. I mean, like he is not a functional passer, and it feels like they're doing everything they can to keep him away from passing situations. And well, so they're, it's funny because it's like the only thing they do well is the tush push. So like, it's funny how that's like their only strong staple thing, but now they're getting hunted for that. Like the, you know, Jason Kelce false start on that, moving the ball. I don't really have a take on the movement of the ball, but I do think it's funny that now everyone's paying all this attention to them. And they have really, it is the price for not winning the Super, not the price, but the consequence of not winning the Super Bowl. Because
it's the price of success. Yeah, like you lose your coordinators. That's why I'm tired of hearing like, oh, the Eagles, Shane Steichen was the mastermind. Even if that's true, like, guess what? You don't get to keep him. Like, that's the NFL. If someone wants to hire your coordinator, you don't get a choice of like, oh, actually, we want to keep him. Tough luck. Figure it out. Hire a good replacement. Like, don't focus on what you can't control. Focus on what you can control.
Or take ownership and take charge and have success on your own, Nick Sirianni. Like, and So I tweeted this out from the blog on the boys account after the game, and I didn't mean this in a negative way. I meant it in a completely serious way. And I don't know who was running the Bleeding Green Nation account after the game, but they retweeted it. So
it's not me.
Well, sometimes I'm not saying
people think it's me. I tweet from my account. I don't tweet from the BGN account.
I'm not saying it to you. That's why I said what I said. But
you're not. I'm just clarifying.
There did seem to be some Eagles fans who agreed with this. So the tweet was, this is why the Sirianni stuff, and what I meant by that is the like antics and the show of it all, is such a slippery slope. If you act that way when you were winning, then nobody can say anything. We say all the time that history is written by the winners. But people remember, and when you slip up, it all falls apart, and the people who backed you up don't want to deal with it anymore. And so that's the take I'm seeing now. It's like people are like, Sirianni sucks. What does he offer? It feels like all he's offered is like negative weight now. Like now he is the reason people are like jumping down their throats and ready to see them fail because of his, you know, antics is the appropriate word at this point. But again, you used to like pound on McCarthy. Like if he's not calling plays, what is he doing? Like, so we're sitting here, these Eagles fans, and they're blaming Brian Johnson and Sean Desai. What is Nick doing? Like what does Nick offer?
Well, part of the problem here is I think, you know, it's like he takes ownership of the Patricia decision, but it's hard for me to fully believe that's just him. And in part because once upon a time, Doug Peterson, after the 2019 season, is asked in his like end of season press conference, is Mike Groh going to be back as offensive coordinator? Is Carson Walsh going to be back as receivers coach? Doug's like, yeah, emphatically, yes. A couple days later, those guys are fired. So like, it's clearly not just like the coach doesn't have full control here. So part of that's an organizational thing. And that's like, it's not always the worst thing in terms of how it's worked out. And they've had some success with it. But I think meddling, you know, there's a fine line with that. It can be an issue and it makes the coach look bad, certainly. So I think part of it is above him, but I'm not excusing him at all. And what should be on him is that, yeah, I'm so sick of the coordinator thing from a standpoint of it's just literally like anyone has problems with something with the Eagles do or the offense at all and it's Brian Johnson's fault. And I'm look, if the Eagles want to fire Brian Johnson, this year
they don't wear Brian Johnson jersey take, and it's a good one.
Yeah. That's a big part of it. But also, like, Brian Johnson is the play caller. So he's calling plays from the menu that is being assembled ultimately at the highest level by Nick Sirianni. So if the menu sucks, then you can't be like, well, I don't like this dish and I don't like this dish. Oh, like, guess what? All the dishes are bad and he's picking from bad dishes. So this isn't to exonerate Brian Johnson. If they want to fire him, fine. But I don't care. But like, that's not going to just fix that alone. You need the head coach who's at the head of this thing to be part of the solution. And a lot of the problems that people seem to have with the Eagles offense is the design. There's a difference between play call and play design, and the play design doesn't seem to be good, and Brian Johnson isn't like solely designing the offense out there. So I don't think Sirianni is taking enough heat. If you want to criticize Brian Johnson, absolutely go for it, but also make sure you're criticizing Nick Sirianni.
I think there's, you know, criticism to go around. Like, I mean, yeah, like Brian Johnson, here's your scoop. Like, you deserve your fair share. Nick Sirianni, you deserve the biggest share because you're the head coach. And again, you're the one who's like, you know, crafted and weaved this persona of whatever you want to call it. But Jalen Hurts, again, and now if Dak Prescott said the thing about lack of commitment in a post-game press conference, you would come here and you would light him up and would talk about how
means.
This is.
I'm kind of confused by that. Like, I don't understand. Well, I don't understand what that means.
While it's vague, I agree with you. It is a really bad look. And
I can't rip him because I don't. I just don't get it. I'm confused.
What good comes from saying that, though? Like, in what world is it a good thing? I mean,
I have a take on it. I'm just confused. I don't know what that means.
The quote was, he doesn't think the team is committed enough right now. And then he got snappy about it. Maybe he sensed that he had waded into some potentially treacherous waters and said, you know, I don't know
what like that. Even when
I don't have
going well.
I'm not saying he's like a jerk. I mean, he's a great human, but I mean, he said
he
like, I don't
can
have
be a little jerky in fairness, like in press conference settings, some of his answers can be a little bit, you know,
whatever he meant.
Terse.
Whatever he meant, there's no positive slant on this. Like, there's no way you take that in the moment, in the context of the moment, and say like, oh, this, like, everything's great. It looks like poor leadership. It looks like you're panicking. It looks like you're freaking out as a locker room. And for it to come from one of the worst players on the team right now is an even worse look. He is limiting the offense in a very significant way. Like, it never felt like, oh, here they come. Here comes Jalen Hurts. And again, even that final possession where it was, oh, they need a field goal to go tie this up. The only positive play is Hurts rushing. Like, he can't throw the ball.
He obviously was sick. So that is, you know, we'll it's, I will bring it up, but it's not a good enough. You paid him $250 million. I don't want to hear he's sick. He can't play well. Like, that's what the money is for. And man, it's disappointing.
He was sick and he got to fly. I'm not saying this is like a good thing. He was obviously sick, but like he got to fly by himself. You know what I mean? Like he seemingly had, you know, resources to help him feel sick. I mean, health is health, but yeah, it's not an excuse.
Here's the problem though. Yeah. Some of these things that have been popping up aren't just like, whoa, he was been awesome. And then this isn't totally uncharacteristic. Some of these issues have been there when he hasn't been sick. So that's why it's not just an excuse that he's sick. And part of that is like being obsessed with the big play, which is kind of like an issue with the team, both defensively and offensively, just like being so obsessed with the big play that you're passing up underneath options, especially in like key scenarios where there's a third down in this game where, you know, Hurts takes a shot to AJ down the left sideline, misses it within his vision, within the same vision. It's not like he's on the opposite side of the field. Devontae Smith is crossing wide open. And it's like, well, it's third and eight. Maybe just get the first down there. You don't need the shot play. So there's some of that. I mean, the underthrow to Quez Watkins in the end zone, part of that is like, why are you throwing to Quez Watkins? Because, or why is Quez Watkins even out there? Because literally anytime the ball goes to him, something bad happens. It's been true for a long time now. That being said, Jalen Hurts has a clean pocket to work with there, and it's underthrown and picked off. So a bad throw. And there's so many times this season, and I've been harping on this all season long, even when he's played well, the time to throw. It's just forever. And I've been harping on this back to like training camp, because there's just times where you see him hold, just holding the ball for like, get rid of it. Stop holding the ball for forever. The longest average time to throw in the NFL. It was an issue in the past for him in his rookie season, in his 2021 season. He got better with it last year. This year, he's kind of reverted back to holding the ball forever. And it goes hand in hand with there's times where he has a clean pocket and he's just bailing from it and rolling right or left. And then no one's there. And it's just like, what? This isn't an offense. Brian Baldinger broke that down in part. And he's like, this is not offense. Like, you can't just have the quarterback bail from the pocket every time and try to make something happen. Like, play within the structure of the offense. Throw with anticipation. I'm not saying the offense is perfect and, you know, everything is fixed if he just does that. But it's just way too much kind of, and this is what happened with Carson Wentz, is like hero ball. Like, sometimes you have to play within the structure of the offense.
Well, it's just, I mean, to really simplify everything, it's simply scramble around, pick up first downs on the ground, and throw the occasional home run ball and either hope it hits or hope you draw a pass interference. That's all it is. Like that's all the offense is right now. So the end of the first half, I was making dinner. I had put my son to bed. So I kind of had one eye on it at that point in time, but it felt like there were like 16 possessions in the final, like 5 minutes of the first half. But Hurts had that third down scramble, to your point, that just like, what are you doing, dude? Like, make a decision. And then he throws it for an incompletion. And I know that didn't cost them because Seattle didn't score there, but it's like, you gave them life. Like, there's not even like heads up play. Like at that point, after you scramble for 12 seconds, just eat the sack. It's third down anyway. Just keep the clock running. And so there's all these like really, really, really He's poor decisions multiple being
times
made
this year where it's, I mean, like, just take the sack.
It's starting to look, it's been looking, and it's only continuing to look more and more like the 2022 season, which was exemplary by all standards, was the aberration, and that he might be closer to the 2021-2023 version of himself across the whole of his career. I mean, again, we've like talked about it like, oh, the offense is going to return. The offense is going to return. Nope. Like, this is really bad. They had two touchdowns, and they were both, what a big surprise, rushing touchdowns, and one of them was a tush push.
Yeah, I mean, that Seahawks defense isn't good either. I mean, we saw that obviously when the Cowboys played the Seahawks, and they're hurt. I think they're even further banged up than they were in that. Like, there's no Devin Witherspoon. Jamal Adams not playing was probably a bonus for the Seahawks. It probably helped them since he's so bad, unfortunately. But yeah, it's a banged up unit that isn't good to begin with. Like, Reek Woolen is, well, didn't even start the game. He's like been benched. Like, they have issues in the secondary. You put up 17 points, and to me, like, the biggest issue was that, and in the moment, I felt this way. It was like, you have the game, or you have the ball. It's 17-13 late in the game. Seahawks are dumb. And
they tried to throw that game. Pete Carroll tried to give them this game.
With the Seahawks had one timeout at the end. All the Eagles offense needed to do there is pick up like one more first down and they win the game. And that's always how it should have been. And it's been an issue all season in terms of the offense has had a chance to close games out. And they did it a couple times earlier in the year. It's not like they never did it, to be clear. But like, that's who the Eagles are when they're at their best. They kind of, and you know that. And we saw that in the Eagles-Cowboys game with the Cooper Rush game in Philly last year. It's just like the Cowboys closed the gap. And then Eagles said, no, we just wanted a big, this big scoring drive, end the game on their terms. The offense needed to do that here, especially when you only scored 17 points and your previous drives in the fourth quarter resulted in like what, an interception and a punt. Like that, at that point, you need to control the game and just put it away. As soon as the Seahawks got the ball at their 8-yard line, I was texting with some friends and they were like, are the Eagles defense going to get stopped here? And I was like, no, but like, I'm obviously it's unacceptable for Matt Patricia and the defense to allow that 92-yard drive, especially when there was multiple third and tens and the Seahawks converted on them. I get that. I'm not going to let them off the hook for that, to be clear, but it never should have gotten to that point. It's like the offense, where's that loss, never should have been able to give the ball back to the Seahawks.
I also think there's like another level of embarrassment that it's like, okay, they pulled off this insane drive and DK Metcalf was a huge part of it. You know, it's like I think like if like when the Zacchaeus touchdown happens and you're the Bills, you're like, well, you know, we're devoting every resource we have to AJ Brown and Devontae Smith. You know what I mean? Like, you're just like, we only have so many hands, but it's like for the guy to be, and I know he had this sick catch that was like insane, you know what I mean? But like, and I guess, you know, for Jackson Smith and Jigba, Dallas native. Jackson Smith and Chigba, by the way, who has a Dallas Cowboys tattoo, to be the one to do it. I guess, you know, maybe you're like, hey, you know, we only have so many resources. I have two other things that I wanted to get to. On the fraud note, more than anyone, you enjoyed pointing out how the 2022 Vikings were frauds. That was ultimately proven to be true. I defended them a lot, and
they
still
definitely had less credibility.
I'm still not willing to put
entering a season.
I'm still not willing to put these Eagles in that box specifically, but point differential gets brought up and got brought up so much with the Vikings. I looked on Monday night. The Eagles are the fourth team in StatHead's database to have at least 10 wins through their first 14 games and a point differential no higher than plus 18. The 2004 Falcons, so the early days of Michael Vick, the 2020 Browns, which obviously went to the playoffs and won that playoff game in Pittsburgh, the 2022 Vikings, who were 11-3, not 10-4, and now the Eagles. They are tied for the best point differential of these four teams at plus 18 with the 2004 Falcons. So, yeah, I mean, this is, you know, pretty significant. Also, to circle back, and I wanted to bring this up because this was a Stolness tweet. John tweeted, I know he had an article that went out right before we started recording. This was about the commitment thing. This is John's tweet, literally. Honestly, more disappointing than the play on the field is how it appears two bad losses to the 49ers and Cowboys may have broken what was supposed to be a rock-solid locker room and team culture. Listening to Hurts' commitment comments, whatever he means by it, it's clear something is amiss, and that's the bigger concern to me. This seems like a team, these are my words now, that is now getting pushed around and punched in the mouth themselves, and they are not comfortable. They were super fine and cool when they were the team running all over everybody, but they're not built to handle any kind of resilience.
Well, that's so weird though, right? Because they were, in terms of like games this year, how many, you know, games did they come back in where it seemed like they did have that as part of their DNA, as part of their personality? But it was in terms of literally like fighting back from, like, they literally did show resiliency in games earlier this year. Inarguably, yes, they did. They showed resiliency.
I'm not saying they didn't. And I'm not trying to say they were purely a lucky team, but they did have, and you know this, they had these weird breaks. They had the Marquez Valdes-Scantling drop.
They also,
you know what I mean?
Like, they had all these... that, and not every team does. There is something
that's
to be
true.
Said for resiliency.
That's why
at
I said
some level.
There was not an absence of resilience, but it wasn't pure resilience is all I'm saying. It was resilience.
It wasn't only,
you know,
resilience.
Forged.
Yes, I agree.
It was resilience forged in the bowels of luck. That's all I'm saying.
But like, again, that's more than none. They had more than none. And now in this larger context, they don't. So that, like, that doesn't really match up to me. And it's weird. And again, it's not, I just keep going back to, it didn't have to be this way. It didn't have to be that you crumbled like this. Like, it wasn't like,
then
well,
why
this
is
always going to happen. Huh?
Then why is it? If it didn't have to be, then why is it?
Because they chose to panic and they're crumbled. Like, it's just, I don't know. It's just like, they just, you lose two
games.
So then
games. What is that? Like, so then Stolness's tweet is fair, that there is this culture of panic, this culture of, you know,
they're not being resilient in this instance. I agree. They were resilient in some games. They're not being resilient right now. The response to adversity has sucked. And I don't get it, because I thought I was willing to give them the benefit of the doubt. I think they earned that at some level. And now it's gone. Any goodwill they had is gone.
Last thing, and then we can take a break. I would like to read you a direct message I received on November 30th, one that you laughed at. That game gave me confidence that we can beat the Eagles.
Yeah, but like the Seahawks didn't play well. It's not like if you look at the win percentage for the entire game, like the Eagles should have won that game. That game wasn't about the Seahawks beat the Eagles as much as the Eagles like lost it more.
It worked out, obviously, in a literal sense, but I sent that message to Mookie on Monday night, and he was like, this is in no way the way I felt like right. or envisioned this. I mean, because he was talking about Geno playing really well. Again, it was just funny. Just let me make my joke.
That's also, a big difference. And another reason why it's more pathetic. It's Drew Lock. Come on, beat Drew Lock. It's Drew Lock. And Jalen Hurts got outplayed by Drew Lock. Like, pathetic. Jalen Hurts has been outplayed the last 3 weeks. When that happens to Brock Purdy, who might be the MVP, or is in that conversation, okay. Dak, who was leading the MVP conversation before looking bad in Buffalo. Okay, like that, those aren't, that's disappointing. And it raises questions about the ceiling of the team and the ceiling of the quarterback. But it's like, okay, it's not the worst thing in the world. Then you lose to Drew Lock and you get outplayed by Drew Lock. And at that point, it's like, what are we doing here? You're the 200, you're the $250 million quarterback and you're getting outplayed by Drew Lock.
But like, you lose to Drew Lock and get outplayed by Drew Lock, not in like a, like what was that crazy like Matt Flynn game for the Packers where he threw like for like 450 yards and 6 touchdowns or what? You know, it wasn't like Drew Lock had the game of all games. I mean, he had an incredible final possession, obviously, and deserves all.
Turn the ball over.
That's fine. All I'm saying is this wasn't like, you know, the best football that Drew Lock has ever. You know, it wasn't like he went off and you lost to that. It was like moderately average mm-hmm. to kind of good, and he still significantly outplayed you.
Mm-hmm.
Want to throw us to break? You want to do that? We will be right back after a break from our sponsors. Welcome back. For the audio audience, Brandon literally threw us to break, but you threw like a chest pass, like it was basketball. So, you know, interesting. Maybe that's the Eagles offense. Maybe, you know, that's the real push. Is Jalen Hurts is just like a pushing chest pass kind of passer at this point in time.
This is a stretch.
I know. I mean, I had to find a way to segue that in.
It's one of my favorite things from high school was when we had this like little group thing that we would do in history class, 10th grade, where we'd have like a group conversation about like a current event or like a political thing. You turn the lights off on the floor.
This was like with the teacher, like not like,
yeah,
not
yeah. like your yeah, friends. Teacher, okay, like, okay. It was just kind of like a conversation. It was supposed to be more like, you know, okay. like conversational. And like less pressure, not like sitting in desk and so formal, just like, you know, getting together, a little communal. And one time someone just had like the most BS point ever, or just like long wind. And then like the teacher, literally, his name was Mr. Wolf. Shout out to Mr. Wolf. Like as this person was talking, Mr. Wolf was chewing gum and like just without like, you know, just looking at them and just taking the gum and like stretching it out like super far. And he was like, that's a stretch. So I love that. It's funny.
Shout out to anyway. Mr. Wolf. The New York Giants lost to the New Orleans Saints 24-6. Tommy DeVito's agent wore a green suit, and that was kind of the highlight. DeVito left this game, obviously, at a point, and Tyrod Taylor came in, but the Giants were never close. I don't think we really need to break these games down as much as we need to kind of like start spinning forward. Do you have like a passionate Giants take before we again talk about them getting ready for the Eagles?
Giants are still bad, it turns out, because the Saints aren't good, and the Saints beat them with very much ease. The Giants are, do you know what they rank in DVOA and point differential?
I do, because I saw you tweet out the opening odds dead last.
Well, they rank dead last in both of those categories. So that's the thing. Like, if the Eagles play them, when the Eagles play them, it's not even about, I think, like me thinking the Eagles can beat them because they're good. I just think they can beat them because they're less worse.
It's literally the worst team in the NFL. Like that's your point. Yeah. Like it's literally the worst team in the NFL, but we will see. Yeah. Us and Steven, we talked about, I think the line was 6.5. Right. And we were like, oh, pff, there's no way. Like, well, of course we'll take these points. The Giants didn't even score 6.5 points. I know that would be impossible, but still. Okay. So that's the game. We'll talk about, I guess, the future of things in a moment. The Washington Commanders. This was a really bad game.
Officially eliminated from the playoffs, mathematically.
They lost 28-20 to the Los Angeles Rams. And by the way, when I was coping on Sunday night and Monday morning, I was kind of like, well, you know, and I've been saying for a while, I think the Rams could be the first 7 seed to win a playoff game. If the Bills get that too, they obviously have a chance. But My thought was like, man, if the Rams play the Eagles in the first round, like I kind of like the Rams odds just a little bit. I mean, I would pick the Eagles, but now it might be the Cowboys.
Anyone's odds against the Eagles in the playoffs right now.
Right, but it could be the Cowboys is my point, especially after Monday night. But that's, again, neither here nor there for this moment. So did you keep eyes on this game at all? Like, did you see they benched Sam Howell? Why? Like, what? Like, why? And I'm not like a Sam Howell truther, but like,
Jacoby Brissett a look at in week 15.
Like, what is the point of this? Like this is so bad. I saw Warren Sharp tweeted out. It was like the sequence of like poor decisions. Like in crunch time, they were huddling before every play. I mean, like, you know, it was just, they just do not care. Like they are just a badly coached football team. That anyone ever believed in Ron Rivera is, as a football coach, is amazing to me.
Yeah, I don't understand the point of playing Jacoby Brissett, especially at this point.
There's nothing to be gleaned.
Is it possible he's better than Sam Howell? Yeah, it is. It's entirely possible. Maybe even likely. But that's not the point of the season at this point. The point is just to play Sam Howell no matter what and see what happens with that, basically, and accumulate as many losses as you can right now, which they are doing that part correctly in terms of they're losing a lot. And where do they rank now in the draft order here? They rank, I have it pulling it up, they rank number 4. So, you know, and they only have the Cardinals, the Patriots, and the Panthers pick going to Chicago in front of them. So maybe they can get even higher. Probably not number 1. Tough to
no,
see.
No, I agree.
Winning 2 more, but they could get as high as 2.
So they're doing everything right in that sense. And I think the Montez Sweat trade was still the right decision for them. But I think it has to kind of make you go, I don't know, that he's playing really well for the Bears. You know what I mean? Like, I know people, you know, have issues with the contract, but I mean, that's a player that was potentially worth re-signing if you feel like you're somewhat close in the next couple of years. Like, he has looked really, really, really good since that trade.
They should have said this at the time, they should have traded one of them, I think, him and Chase Young, not both of them.
Right. So, I mean, and trade Chase Young. Fine. Like, get a pick. Like, you're not going to, like, but now you're down 2 edge rushers. And I get it if you didn't want to bring Young back. But, like, Montez Sweat, again, has looked good. So, yeah, the Commanders are terrible. They have they're tied for the second worst point differential in the NFL. The Giants at minus 149, the Panthers and Commanders at minus 142. So, yeah, just a rough scene for the Commanders. Are we ready to spin forward?
Let's spin it forward.
Okay, give us a there we go. That's your spin? What's the best thing that spins?
One of the Price is Right wheel.
Oh, what a great answer. I don't even want to come up with something. That was a good choice. Okay, so this is the state of things. The Niners are pretty uncatchable. Right, like we're kind of willing to concede that Niners are the 1 seed, so we don't really have to worry about Dallas. Philly is the 1 seed. If Detroit wins out, and because they have a game against Dallas, that's how they impact the Cowboys. Mm-hmm. If they win out, they're the 2 seed, even if Philly wins out, because Detroit takes care of Dallas in that sense. If Philly wins out, they win the division, but can only control their destiny for the 3 seed. Obviously, if Dallas wins out, they're not guaranteed anything. The Cowboys, although if they get the 1 loss they need from Philly, Dallas controls their destiny, not just for the division, but for the 2 seed as well, because they play the Lions, obviously. Am I missing anything?
Nope, that's it. I mean, the non-NFC East winner will almost assuredly be the 5 seed. It's not impossible they could drop lower than that, but it is very
likely. That's more certain to me, and I think to you, than that the NFC East winner will be the 2 seed, because things have tightened up with Detroit. Mm-hmm. It felt like for a while that the NFC East winner would be the 1 or 2, but San Francisco has now put some distance and Detroit has closed the gap. So the NFC East winner is going to be the 2 or 3. And I still think 2 is probably more likely, obviously, especially if Dallas beats Detroit.
But I think it is mathematically more likely, yes.
But it is overwhelmingly likely that the NFC East loser is going to be the 5. And that team will also, it's becoming more and more likely, visit the Buccaneers. I know the Saints are there. The Falcons seem kind of out of that.
I don't know. They're still around. That whole division is so bad. No one's truly out of it.
But the Bucs passed the eye test the most.
I agree, but it's just, I would not count on anything in that division.
So this is, and this is where we're at as far as the tiebreakers are concerned. Do you know all of the tiebreakers, Brandon, in the NFCs for the division for Dallas, for Philadelphia?
NFC East, NFC least, yeah. I guess.
NFC Beast. I don't know. So no, this is the these are the tie-breaking scenarios in order. So number one, and Dallas and Philadelphia, we should say now, are both 10-4. Dallas currently leads the division because they have a better division winning percentage. The Cowboys have played 5 divisional games, whereas the Eagles have only played 4. That's why if the Eagles win out, they're fine. But so the first tiebreaker is head-to-head. These teams split with one another, so we can move on. Number two is best record or the record within the division. Again, if we presume Dallas were to beat the Commanders in week 18, which I think we both assume that they will, they're 5-1. If Philadelphia wins their 2 games against the Giants, they're 5-1. Now we have to move on. Best record within common games. That's why this weekend was significant, why Philadelphia really blew it. Dallas lost to Buffalo, and that gave Philadelphia a chance to pick up that tiebreaker because they beat the Bills, and Dallas beat the Seahawks. So if Philly had done so, they would have pretty much ran away with this at this point in time. But that was a push. So they're at a complete and total push right now on common games. Beyond that, no, that's not true, right?
I don't know. I'm kind of lost in all this, to be honest.
So, but no, they are going to push, I'm sorry, on common games. So that takes us to record within the conference. That's also why Monday night was significant for the overall conversation, because Philadelphia lost to an NFC opponent. As of now, each team's 4 losses, they both have lost to each other, obviously. They both have gotten destroyed by the 49ers. They both have lost to an AFC team, Dallas to Buffalo, Philly to New York. And they have both lost to another NFC team, Dallas in Arizona and Philadelphia in Seattle. So their conference records are now equal and will be, again, in all likelihood, down the line. That takes us to what the tiebreaker will ultimately wind up being, which Philadelphia will probably wind up winning, and that is the strength of victory. Now, a lot of people... Yeah, a lot of people had questions. What is that? That is the record of your opponents. That is how the strength of those wins is calculated.
Makes sense. And again, you're rewarded for playing harder teams, beating better teams.
For beating harder teams.
Yeah, rather. Beating harder teams.
But so Philadelphia has that. It's possible that Dallas could take that tiebreaker if the Panthers were to win out, right? Like if the Cardinals, you know, or not the Cardinals, excuse me, but like, you know, if who was the other, if the Chargers, you know, did better or whatever, like things like that. And if the team, if the Chiefs were to falter and flounder, another team that the Chiefs beat, but again, or excuse me, the Eagles beat, but that is really unlikely. So it will, if both these teams win out, it likely comes down to strength of victory. The fifth tiebreaker, which Philadelphia in all likelihood will have, although it is not guaranteed to happen. But again, the overwhelming likelihood.
Isn't it crazy how if you go down the tiebreakers far enough, there's a coin flip in there? Isn't that insane? Why would that ever be a factor? That's insane.
Well,
I know
mean,
it probably won't happen, but like
it's, you, at you some have point, to come you, up to... no, but at some point you reach like there's a finite amount of measurability.
There has to be something that's better. There has to be something that's better than literally flipping a coin. That's insane to me.
There's a finite amount of things. This brings me to, I don't think I've ever thrown this out. A dinner conversation I like to have with people all the time. Is there not, in your mind, a finite amount of money on the earth? Like, wouldn't it make sense theoretically that there is like a calculable amount of dollars that is just like disseminated amongst all humans?
That's pretty complicated, I think.
But like, if there isn't and we can just create money, that seems weird and that seems strange. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, theoretically, there is a finite amount of money on the face of the earth. And if it's not money, it's goods and valuables. So
yeah,
there's like
value, finite,
there's a, and like,
for valued but that's assets what, and whatnot.
There's a finite amount of tangible assets that can be accrued on earth. It's an incredible number, but it is a finite number nonetheless. And in that same sense, there's a finite amount of measurable tie-breaking scenarios which you can that you can reach, which is why a coin toss does make sense, however lame it would be.
No, you can come up with something better.
I've looked into the money thing. There's like a real big...
I've looked into the money.
No, thing. Well, I Googled it because I was like, somebody has to have thought about this before. And there was this like insane Reddit thread of people like talking about the same thing. So it was funny. Yeah, whatever. Okay, so that's where we're at. So final 3 games of the regular season for these two teams. The Eagles host the Giants this week and then host the Cardinals and Jonathan Gannon. How funny would it be if Jonathan Gannon were the one to ultimately do this And then they visit the Giants at MetLife Stadium to round this all out. We've been talking about like, oh, imagine if the Eagles and Cowboys have nothing to play for in week 18 and they just let the Giants and Commanders win and you know, worsen their draft position. I think we can throw that likelihood out. It seems like those games are going to matter.
Probably, which is unfortunate because that's good news for the Commanders and the Giants.
And the Niners. But so the Cowboys' final three games, they're in Miami on Sunday. The Eagles play Christmas Day at noon. Is that right?
It's like 4, I think, 4:25.
So they're the afternoon game on Christmas. Okay. So Dallas will have already played before Philadelphia gets here. We'll get to predictions in a moment. But then the Cowboys host the Lions next Saturday. It's on Saturday, not Sunday. And then they are in Washington to play the Commanders in week 18. That's that. Any points or thoughts on this so far?
No.
Are you sure?
Yep.
Okay. Then I guess are we ready to pick games? Is that what you want to do? You want to do anything else?
Games.
It's amazing how football could be the thing you hate the most. You know what I mean? Like at a certain moment in time. And then like one thing can happen and you can be right back.
Yeah, it is. That's part of the fun of everything. And I always like to remind myself that, you know, the joy of winning does not come without the pain of losing. That's just true. So whenever, you know, you're like, oh, this sucks. Like, yeah, that's what makes the winning feel good, is that the losing sucks. It wouldn't be fun to win if the losing was not hurtful.
So we're going in chronological order.
That being said, I am ready for this season to be over from a standpoint of just like, I'm just tired. All these late games, just ridiculous.
I actually feel really bad for you that the Eagles are playing on Christmas in the middle of the day. That stinks. Like, that takes up your whole Christmas day. Like,
it is a bummer. It's my mom's birthday, too. So, you know, shout out to my mom. So, yeah, it is a little bit unfortunate. Thankfully, I'm going to get to spend time with her, you know, over the weekend leading up to the game. But, yeah, it is. It's actually the second time I've had to do this because the Eagles also played on Christmas in 2017. So,
Happy birthday. Happy early birthday, Mrs. G. The Cowboys and Eagles played on Christmas Day in the first Cowboys game I ever went to. In
Jeff Garcia, baby.
That 2006 game. Yeah. That was
I want to really do a podcast this offseason where we just like name, you know how like people like to joke about guys just love like sitting around and naming random sports players, like naming guys just love it. We should do a podcast where we lean into the parody and just name players, name guys.
Aiken and Adele. Anyway, so I'm going to touch on all, not all, but a lot of games that are significant to this situation. Because one of these teams is going to win the division and one's going to be the five seed. And so their opponents matter in all this. So Thursday Night Football features the Saints going to LA to play the Rams. Once again, the Rams, both these teams could be the two playoff or the two teams that the Cowboys and Eagles face in the playoffs if things break, you know, certain directions. I think we're probably rooting for the Saints to win this game, right? Like, what's your take on this?
Eagles have the same second round pick, so I don't want them to make it.
Okay.
It's true. I mean, I'm incentivized against that.
No, that's fair. But again, just relative to, I think it helps if you're looking at just the playoff matchup specifically. Mm-hmm. I think it's fair to be fearful of the Rams, so maybe you want them out of the picture. But so that's Thursday Night Football. The Rams are 4-point favorites. We will discuss all of the games on Friday on actually, I forgot our schedule this week, but whatever.
We will on TGI Football, I believe.
But we will be recapping. We will be recapping this game,
right?
Obviously. Okay, so that's that. The next one of note, the Lions are in Minnesota to take on the Vikings. The Lions are 3-point favorites on the road. Again, I think that so in our rooting guides, we have been rooting for the Lions as of late, as Cowboys fans. Last week, it actually helped them clinch a playoff berth. But our thought and logic behind that, and a lot of Cowboys fans were confused, was if Dallas can't be the one seed, then we want it to be Detroit. We don't want it to be San Francisco. We don't want it to be Philadelphia. And that is also true for the two seed. And we have accomplished the goal in that Detroit now controls their destiny towards the two seed. So, you know, if you're worried, if you're a Cowboys fan about winning the division and not being the three seed, I think it's best to root against Detroit in this situation. And obviously for the Eagles as well.
Yeah, but I do think the Lions will win.
Yeah, me too. Okay, then next up, as far as games that have any kind of relevance, on the mixtape, the Washington Commanders. Dude, this is really sad. The Washington Commanders will be at MetLife on Sunday to play the Jets. Hmm. And they are 3-point underdogs, the Commanders are. That is really sad.
I'll take the Jets.
I don't know, man. I'm not comfortable betting on the Jets. I'm not. I'm going to take the Commanders here. I think you're overreacting just a teeny tiny bit. The Cowboys will be in the afternoon window on Sunday, on Christmas Eve at Miami playing the Dolphins. They are, this opened at 2, Dallas plus 2. It's now, it's a kind of moved down to 1, but it's stabilized at 1.5. Dallas 1.5 point underdogs.
Do we know if Tyreek is playing? Like, what's the status on that as of Tuesday?
We don't quite
1:10. Because that's a big deal. That's a big factor in my pick. So I'm gonna lean Dolphins now, but I very much reserve the right to change that for later in the week.
Well, that's why everybody should listen to TGF Football on the SB Nation and NFL. That's your official pick. I'm gonna lean Cowboys right now. They have not lost 2 games in a row since Thanksgiving 2021. They generally respond well. This game is going to be really annoying for the fan base that loses it, though, because everyone's going to, you're going to have to deal with like your frauds, blah, 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 blah. But I'll barely lean Cowboys, obviously. Final game of actually, we have 2 more games of significance, and we're going in chronological order here. But Giants in Philly on Monday afternoon, Philly laying 10.5.
They've lost 3 in a row and they're 10.5 point favorites, which tells you just how bad the Giants are. Look, I don't think the Eagles, I don't like the Eagles against anyone, right? Like, I don't feel confident in their part in them winning the game, but I do feel confident in the Giants being worse because they just have been. And also Sirianni's 3-0 against Stable, and 2 of those games were blowouts. The other one was kind of like a weird one that they were just like just trying to skate by and not do too much, but still win in week 18 last year. So I give, and the Eagles are literally 24-6 in their last 30 games against the Giants dating back to 2008. So it's hard for me to be like, Giants are going to come in here and win with any kind of confidence. I don't believe in the Eagles. I just think the Giants are worse. So I'll take the Eagles to win, but I can't give the Eagles the benefit of the doubt when it comes to covering.
Yeah. I just cannot lay over double digit points.
It is a big line.
It is massive. I mean, this is an offense that is struggling to score. I mean, that again, you know, they didn't score an offensive touchdown against the Cowboys. They only scored 2 against the Niners. Is that correct? And 1 was in garbage time. And then they scored 2 in Seattle, one of which was the tush push. I think 1 was a tush push against San Francisco as well. So, I mean, like, they will probably have a tush push touchdown, but like, I can't even count on them to score 20 points right now. You just can't. So, now that being said, it's really difficult to count on the Giants to score 10 points, which, you know, is kind of the thing here. But I'll take the Eagles to win. Not because I'm like, oh, like they haven't given me a reason to jump, because they absolutely have. But the Giants are that bad. So right. I'll take them to win, but I am definitely taking the points here. Even I don't even feel confident about the points, but like I just in good faith cannot take the or lay the points on behalf of the Eagles. I think we're in the same boat here. The final game that is not NFC East related, but does have a huge impact on things, is the San Francisco 49ers hosting the Baltimore Ravens on Christmas night, right after the Giants Eagles game. Dude, ESPN's got to be thrilled. They finally got a good Monday Night Football game. Like they're probably like,
although. Like, it's kind of worse that it's on Christmas, right? Because that's not like a true, you're losing some of the luster of that game, I feel like. Because not, it's, also, not like, it's a different kind of holiday, I feel like. It's not like Thanksgiving. It's different.
I agree with you.
No, it's not this staple. Like, people watch football on Thanksgiving. Right. I don't think people necessarily watch football on Christmas.
I agree. And I also think that, like, and I mentioned this on Monday Football Monday with Mark, like, are we going to, like, act like whoever loses this game is, like, a loser? No. No. Like, 2 teams who have both clinched playoff spots. Well, yeah. But 2 teams who have clinched playoff spots with 3 weeks to go in the regular season, you know, who are both, you know, the 1 seed right now. Like, it isn't, like, do or die. You know what I mean? So, no. Like, it has kind of, like, we talked about Cowboys-Eagles. It has lost a little bit of juice in that way.
I don't think so. I just think it's kind of, like, a really intriguing kind of house money playoff or potential Super Bowl preview, I should say.
I'm going to take the Niners, but I'm going to take the points as well. I'm going to do that. I mean, it's just 5.5 is a lot, even though Baltimore hasn't like been an offensive juggernaut as of late. But if this is a potential MVP night for Lamar, I know that makes you just swell with joy.
Well, I think he's the MVP.
You must really hate Brock Purdy.
No, I don't. I really don't.
I think I know what this is.
I don't care.
You don't want the Eagles NFC Championship game win to be like further weakened by the take of the Niners didn't have their MVP quarterback. I've fully diagnosed what's happening here. Interesting.
I don't even follow along with what you're saying, but I'm going to take the 49ers to win because when they've played at their best, they've been unbeatable. I think even when the Ravens have played at their best, they're really good, but I still think they're There's flaws there. There's holes. And I just think the 49ers kind of look flawless.
Who do you trust more as a head coach? Like, not as a play caller. Because as a play caller, it's Kyle Shanahan. But, like, I think I trust John Harbaugh as a head coach more. Again, I recognize I'm moving goalposts a little bit.
There's organizational philosophy stuff that goes into that. You know, the Ravens are obviously more analytically inclined. So, yeah, I would give Harbaugh that edge there. But, you know, for obviously, yeah, from schematic and everything, the 49ers are just – they're rolling. Here's the thing. Here's the thing that is tough about the Eagles. Like, it's not your year every year. It just isn't. And I said that going into the season. Like, it's so hard to get back to the Super Bowl. Sometimes it is your year. Sometimes it's not your year. It's clearly not the Eagles' year. That's very much apparent. It is seemingly the 49ers' year. So it's their year, and I'm sticking with them.
Well, and that's what makes, if you know, don't cash in when it is your year, so painful, because they don't,
right?
They're not guaranteed to come around, you know, like once every 5 years, once every 10 years, like once every 50 years. Yeah.
I'm not saying it's like your year, so you definitely win the championship. It's like your year, you have the chance to very much win it. And whether you do or don't, I don't know. That's not guaranteed.
It has, but yes. It has all worked out San Francisco's way, and especially in that the top two, you know, contenders who they've eliminated in thorough fashion are in the same division, right? So, like, you know, they're beating up on each other and they're hurting one another's playoff chances, and they're forcing one, you know, to play on the road just by proxy of how the playoffs work. So, yeah, this is San Francisco's for the taking. I agree. That's why I think they'll win this game. But
you know, I don't think they get beat by anyone other than, you know, the Bills could be
themselves.
Interesting. Yeah, obviously, if they get to the Super Bowl. Yes, that's what I was going to say. Yeah, I think they can beat themselves for sure, but I don't think anyone can just straight up beat them. Just like 49ers couldn't even do anything. Like, they played their best game in the Ravens or whoever. Although, again, I think the Bills could potentially, if they get, like, this is a long ways down the road, but if the Bills, like, continue to ascend and stay hot and get to the Super Bowl, then I would start to kind of wonder about that a little bit. But for now, no.
Okay, so then we are forecasting the same exact circumstances next week. Although I think if everything we said happens, I think Philly would return to the division lead because they'd have that fifth division game and obviously fourth division win.
The division order right now is kind of like fake, you know, or like
right. I'm just Philly. Just stating the facts as they lie.
I know it's just, but it's like kind of just, it's like dumb because it's like, yeah, the Cowboys are technically first, but they don't control things. It's just a matter of timing.
Let's get to songs. This is our last mixtape before Christmas, so a last opportunity to add Christmas music, which you haven't really done. Rachel's,
I haven't really been in the holiday spirit with the Eagles losing.
They've lost every game in the month of December, so how could you be?
I know.
Rachel's submission is in. Her song choice is Silent Night by The Temptations. Incredible choice by Rachel.
Yeah, that's a good one. What's your song?
You're up first.
Wow. I'm going to go with White Christmas by Bing Crosby. Bing Crosby, one of the true goats of holiday Christmas music. Fantastic. Has a great deep voice. So, White Christmas.
That's a good choice. Really classic. I've actually, like, another, like, dinner conversation I like to have is, like, why do any artists, like, try to write new Christmas musics or new Christmas songs?
Some of them hit.
I mean, it's rare, though.
Mariah Carey.
Well, I know, but, like, even that's, like, 20 years old. You know what I mean?
But I'm saying that at one point in time, that is perceived as new.
But that's... We have reached the point in time, and we've been here for like 10 years. We don't need new songs. If you want to cover a Christmas song, you want to put out a holiday album where you sing Jingle Bells and Frosty the Snowman and everything, I'm totally fine. I'll listen and I'll throw it on the holiday mix. But like, we need the songs that the little kids can sing the words to. We don't need new songs that we have to learn the words to this time of year. We're busy. You know what I mean? We don't have time to learn the words to your song.
Do you have any especially favorite covers of any like classic Christmas songs? Obviously, you know, Mariah Carey would be up there.
I mean, I'm fond of Michael Bublé's Christmas album. I put a song on our playlist last week from it. But like, I love his cover of Frosty the Snowman. I love his cover of Jingle Bells with the I forget the featuring artist he's with, but they're great. It's the Something Sisters, I think. But it's got like a cool like jazzy kind of sound. Pentatonix has some great Christmas covers, obviously in their acapella sense. Do you have a favorite?
I like when there's bands you realize don't even have Christmas albums. That's kind of funny. Or do Christmas songs. Like NSYNC has a Christmas album. I remember listening to that.
What do you? Young. that's a really famous album. Like, what, like, and that, well, that's, I mean, that's a case like Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays. They wrote that song. That song slaps. But again,
I'm not saying everyone like 25 years old. But some people might not. You know, I mean, they're not known for being a Christmas band or album, is my point. Like, you know, like, unlike the classics, Weezer has a Christmas album.
Iration, we've got some songs. They have a version of Last Christmas that's pretty good.
One of my favorite versions of Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas is by Coldplay. They do a nice little version of that. So I kind of just like sometimes a, yeah, like one
Train.
Of the bands.
Train has a Train. Christmas album as well. Yeah.
So. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Train,
I mean,
gets a lot of hate, but, you know, they had some bangers.
I mean, is Hey Soul Sister my favorite song ever? No.
No.
But like, they do have great songs, but like, I'd put them with like the Plain White Tees or something like that. Like, I'm fine with
Calling All Angels. I mean? Like, great song. That was so big. That was so big in the moment.
They have a song. I know this isn't something that we want to hear right now, but they have a song called Save Me San Francisco that's really great as well.
Mm. Still making music, huh?
Oh, I mean, this was like 2012, 2013. Yeah, but no more new Christmas songs. Again, you want to cover anything, by all means, do it. But no more new songs. So that being said, it's time for my submission. And we couldn't get through Christmas without adding it, obviously. And you mentioned it several times. All I Want for Christmas Is You by Mariah Carey. I mean, how could we not? Like, it's the most, like booming Christmas song. Like, there's like a lot of them are kind of like, you know, fun and like good background music. But like someone puts this on, it's like, okay, this is serious Christmas party all of a sudden.
I went to this bar in Pittsburgh once where it was only like me and
for Manny Brothers.
No, a bar. Like a Manny not Brothers. A no food, just bar. Manny Brothers. Only food. I mean Manny only Brothers. Only drinks.
For Manny and Brothers is the best sandwich in all of Pennsylvania.
It's not true. I wish their sandwiches were good. It's very disappointing to me. I wanted to enjoy it when I went and the fries were bad. Anyway, I'll give them another chance at some point, probably in the future, but disappointed. The only songs that people were playing in the six, like this bar full of six people, were Fill Me Up Buttercup like 100 times in a row. And they interrupted it one time to play Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas Is You. And this was like in July. So I don't know. I don't know what that was about. But
that's a funny story. But the song is called Build Me Up Buttercup, not Fill Me Up Buttercup.
You're right.
So embarrassing moment for you. Last thing, and then we leave. I just saw a quote or a tweet from Ian Rappaport. I'm going to read it to you verbatim, and then I want your thoughts, and we'll leave. Jets quarterback Aaron Rodgers says on Pat McAfee's show that if he were 100%, he'd be pushing to come back. But he's not there. Quote, being medically cleared as 100% healed is not realistic at 14 weeks. End quote.
Yeah, okay. Glad to know what we knew all along.